Okay. Let me just see how this advances. There we go. I'm going to be talking today about some of the basic proposal that our work group has made for revisions of the DSM-IV substance use disorders. And the first proposal that we're making is, should the abuse and dependence criteria be combined? And I'm going to go through a series of item response theory analyses, and I wanted to let you know that the data that underlies the analyses that I'm going to be presenting here today is from a large national survey. It's called the National Epidemiologic Survey on Alcohol and Related Conditions, and it was a nationally representative sample, about 43,093 people. We oversampled on minorities and on young adults age 20 to 24, I believe, 20 to 25, or 18 to 25. And so this is a representative sample. The analyses are conducted on a subsample of the population who were current drinkers. That means that they had at least 12 drinks in the past year. So in item response theory, what you're trying to answer the question on whether or not you have a good fit to a continuous or a unidimensional model underlying the construct of abuse and dependence and those criteria put together. And there is two parameters that are derived from the model. One is a discrimination parameter, which is not that much of interest today in my discussion. But the other parameter is severity of the threshold. So you're looking at an IRT curve right here. And basically, is there a point? Do we have pointers?
You have to shake it and then the arrow appears.
Oh, is that working? Okay. So basically what these are, each curve represents the severity of the criteria. The more to the right, the more severe the criteria or the lower probability of endorsement of that criteria. And you can see in this case that that's legal problems. And then, shaking it some more. And then the lime green is the least severe, and or it's drinking larger amounts or for longer than intended. And so what we did discover is that, and this has been replicated in other data sets, other national data sets, clinical data sets, data sets from other countries. So there was a lot of replication of these analyses across treatment and populations. And what we found for alcohol abuse and dependence was, yes, there was an underlying dimension that represented a construct of alcohol use disorder when you combine the abuse and dependence criteria. And we also found that for cannabis users, as well as for cocaine and crack, and for hallucinogens. We found it also for inhalants. And another thing that we found, if you look closely at these curves, and I know that they're not that easy to read, but we find that among the most severe problems, for example, the dark blue line here that represents legal problems, that among the most severe problems were some of the abuse criteria, and some of the light blue, larger and longer, or quit control, are the dependence criteria, and they were dependence criteria, but they were the least severe. So this is another reason, this is another indication that supports our proposal to combine abuse and dependence criteria. We also found it for amphetamines, as well as tranquilizers, opioids, sedatives, and so that's some of the evidence that we have, and there's been literally dozens and dozens and dozens, maybe close to 50 or 60 papers that have been published in this area using the item response theory. The next revision under consideration is what measures of severity should be included for substance-related disorders, given that we have shown that it is a good fit to a continuous model, or there is an underlying unidimensional construct. So basically what we did is we compared two levels of severity. One is just what a lot of people do, and that's just a simple count of the 11 abuse and dependence criteria. And the other one that we compared it against was a count of the it was basically a symptom count, but the symptoms were weighted by the severity parameter, the value of the severity parameter that we found in the IRT analyses. So what we did is we looked at those two counts and looked at their relationship between known correlates of severity, which included consumption, pathological functioning, family history of alcoholism, antisocial personality disorder, early onset of drinking, which is usually indicative of severity. And basically what this is showing, is that if you just look at the severity, the actual value of the severity parameter, and you look at the mean number of criteria that a person endorsed, you find that the correlation is very close, 0.86 when you include legal problems, and 0.98 when you exclude legal problems. And what we found is that when you compare these two ways to count the criteria to develop a measure of severity, is that there really wasn't much difference between the simple count and the one that was weighted by severity. And we found also for this particular validator, family history of alcoholism, again, there wasn't really too much difference between a simple count and one that was weighted by severity. We found similar results when we plotted the number of criteria or severity equivalent against antisocial personality disorder symptoms or drinking prior to the age of 15, a similar result, really not that much difference. Or ethanol intake, in this case, was average daily volume. This was overall frequency of drinking, again, not much difference. And we find a very strong positive relationship, of course. The largest quantity of drinks consumed in a day, the frequency of drinking 5+. So basically, what we decided is that since the simple count of criteria did just as well, or showed just as strong a relationship against these various validators, that we might as well just basically propose as a simple count of abuse and dependence criteria, which are combined, in order to determine severity. We haven't quite decided where those cut points would be, but we are thinking that maybe 2+ would be indicative of a disorder in the new combined abuse and dependence criteria. 3 would be moderate, perhaps, and 4+ would be more severe. But we haven't really gotten there yet. The next revision under consideration was and this came very early on, maybe 2 years ago, is whether or not we should use biological markers as diagnostic criteria for substance use disorders. So basically, after 10 literature reviews were prepared, focusing on potential biomarkers, these are the results. Before going into those reviews, we really thought it was very important to differentiate between biomarkers of heavy substance use versus substance use disorders. And we were going to be identifying biomarkers in any biological tissues, blood or urine, saliva or hair, as objective evidence of substance use, but not substance use disorders. So we found some biomarkers for heavy consumption, but we weren't really getting very far in finding those that were specific, or at least enough evidence to show that they were biomarkers for substance use disorders. And we identified some biomarkers that may be potentially related to substance use disorders, and you can read them here. Many of them were genetic variants influencing the risk of alcohol and other drug dependence, but we found that our basic conclusions after this review is we determined that these specific variants are not ready for prime time and cannot be used as criteria for substance use disorders. And apparently what the evidence now is that these genetic variants appear to function as risk factors rather than laboratory indicators of the presence or the absence of disorder. And each, of course, as we know, is responsible for only a small increment in risk of various substance use disorders. Another consideration that we had considered is what about cannabis withdrawal? That was not included in the DSM-4, and a lot of evidence has been accumulating to suggest that it may indeed exist. So based on an extensive review of the literature since the publication of the DSM-4 largely, we did determine that there were withdrawal criteria that had substantial and robust evidence from both laboratory and clinical studies, and the withdrawal criteria selected had to show strong association with potential validators such as quantity and frequency and duration and use of cannabis, and it did. And so basically these are the criteria that we arrived at for cannabis withdrawal and that will be appearing in the DSM-5, along with the other withdrawal syndromes associated with alcohol and other drugs.